From Clovis to Kingsburg, from Fresno to Bakersfield, and everything in between, we've got you covered. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, your number one source for high school highlights, riveting talk, and hometown heroes. And here is your host, Paul Metters.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. And never a dull moment here. First of all, my speaker is extremely loud in the store, so maybe everybody on the entire block of Blackstone Avenue can hear me right now. But we're having a good time throwing the football around a little bit. This is a great place to do my show. This is the only place I want to do my show here at First String Sports, in the Letterman's Jacket Room, off to the right-hand side, every Saturday from 10 to 12. This is year number 5. I feel blessed and fortunate to be able to talk about the wonderful student-athletes in the Central Section, First String Sports, wonderful sponsors. The only place where you can get your Letterman's Jacket. They'll embroider it for you here. They'll help you set it up. They'll size it for you. They have an iPad that's right next to my iPad that's streaming the show, and they'll put some mock-ups for you. So anyway, great, great facility here at First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue in between Herndon and Sierra. Also want to thank a few of our other sponsors, Clovis Stone Masonry and Landscape Supply. They started sponsoring 1430 ESPN about 6 weeks ago. Thank you guys for locking in and helping us out. They're located on Sunnyside, just south of Herndon. Also want to thank Elite Performance Center, Fresno County Superintendent of Schools, Raw Farms, and who sponsors our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week. Cool deal that Phil Benanti, who is my broadcast partner and has a show called Behind the Bench, we do a big deal with our 1430 Student Athlete of the Week. Can you guys believe it? Eight games are through Central Section football season. Two more weeks. Dos mas. It's crazy. Before you know it, playoffs are going to be here. We're going to be chatting about the projections in a couple weeks. The brackets will come out on, what, November 1st? Is that what it is? November 1st, day after Halloween. Usually around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. I think the brackets are going to be much easier this year to determine. A few new rules. Got to be in the 25 percentile in your division to be able to move up. So basically, if you're in your base division, really good chance that you're going to stay in that division. Again, don't mark my words as 100% gospel. I mean, remember last year we did some projections and we were way off on a lot of stuff. So anyway, two more weeks of the regular season of league play, and then we're going to hit playoffs. All right, so I got a really fun and informative show today. I have four guests coming on. Four guests. After the break, I'm going to recap the games from Thursday and Friday. I was able to check out two games this week. Last night we broadcasted Kingsburg and Kermit at Kingsburg. And I was able to check out the really intense and really good football game between Central East and Clovis West on Thursday. I'll break those down in just a second. But today, four guests, like I mentioned, around 10:35, Cam Orell is coming on the show. I always love when Cam comes on. He wasn't able to come on last year, so we got some catch-up to do. You guys know Cam Orell, Chowchilla grad, Fresno City, Fresno State. Had a nice career in the NFL, does a fantastic job with the Fresno State broadcasts, wealth of knowledge, broadcast games on TV as well. He was at the Redwood and Golden West game. I love talking with Cam, man. He keeps it real. He knows what it's like to be a Division I athlete, knows what it's like to be a pro, knows what it takes. The dude's a lot of fun, too. If you guys follow me on social media, I've mentioned it a few times on the radio as well. I'm a big anti-wave guy. Fresno State games. I routinely post pictures, if the wave is coming my way, of standing up against the wave and doing a big thumbs down. I think Cam is on my side. Might start a crusade. So get thoughts from Cam about that. Of course, Fresno State stuff, recruits. Speaking of recruits, After Cam, at the top of the hour, man, we're double-dipping here with some big-time guys. Jackson Moore of 24/7 Sports. He's a must-follow for all things in the Central Valley. Fresno State, obviously, runs the University of Oregon boards as well, a recruiting guru. You know, got that big Deegan Rose announcement a couple weeks ago, flipped from Oregon State to Fresno State. We'll chat about that. And a lot of the players that played here in the Valley to play for Fresno State as well. We'll chop all that up as well. All right. So I'm going rapid fire around 11:35-ish with two coaches. So Lewis Franklin from Bullard is going to come on. They had a big win last night, 30-21 against Justin Garza. Beat Madera the week before. That team is fully healthy, so good to catch up with Lewis about how his team is performing right now. If you guys have not noticed, one of the undefeated teams in the Central section is Liberty Madera. Coach Mike Nolte is doing a fantastic job, as always. He's been there a long time. That running game is legit, averaging 361 yards on the ground before last night's win, 48-6 at Parlier. 361 yards on the ground averaging. I don't know what the Central section record is, but, I mean, that's got to be at least a top 10 performance of all time. They can keep that up, man. They're going to be a force in the playoffs. So, Lewis Franklin, Mike Nolte at the end of the show. Excited to talk to those two guys. So, I mentioned I went to the Central East and Clovis West game on Thursday night at Veterans Memorial Stadium. What are the better football games I've seen this year? Central East came away with the win, 46-39. Talk about back and forth. The second half was pretty wild. Clovis West was up in the first half. You got to know some adjustments are going to be made, and they certainly were. Back and forth, back and forth. Heck, Brandon Smith was an absolute beast that night. Scored 5 touchdowns. 261 yards on the ground on 31 carries. Jelani Dipple throwing the football, 372 passing yards, 22 of 35. Receivers were on point. As always, a couple kids had 100-yard games. Cooks and Harris, 150 for Cooks, 2 touchdowns. Harris had 123 yards. Didn't have any touchdowns, but he made some really nice catches down the stretch. They didn't seal the game until Brandon Smith ran like a 55-yard touchdown to make it 46-39. They went for 2, wasn't able to get it. Just a back-and-forth football game. I thought Clovis West was going to have a chance to tie the football game or maybe even take the lead. J.J. Howard was unbelievable at quarterback for Clovis West. There's a reason why he's a high-level recruit. Threw 5 touchdowns in that game. So with 2:44 left in the game, Brandon Smith scored that touchdown to take the lead. I thought Clovis West was going to have a chance. I'm like, this is going to be in J.J. Howard's hands. Coach Kyle Biggs calls for a pooch kick / onside, and Central East was able to recover it, and clock winded down, and that was it. As a football fan, I would have loved to have seen what J.J. Howard could have done without his top receiver. R.J. Jefferson, unfortunately, is injured. Might be able to come back at the end of the year. But nice win for Central. It was win number 100 for Coach Kyle Biggs. 100 wins and 21 losses. That's his time at Central / Central East. He's got the 4 Central section titles, that state title in 2019. Next week's game is going to be an absolute banger. Going to be playing Clovis High. Both teams 3-0 in the track. Number 1 seed implications. We're going to have that game on 1430 ESPN. So next week's game is going to be incredible between Central East and Clovis High. The game that we did last night was Kerman and Kingsburg. Always great to head down to Kingsburg. It was feeder night. Saw my students down there on the field. They were in the band as well. So that was really fun to see. Kerman came in at 6-1 overall. Kingsburg at 4-3. Defensive battle. It was 10-7 at halftime, and that score held true. 10-7 final. Kingsburg defense came to play, right? A couple ways to look at it. Kerman floundered in the red zone. Could look at it that way. Had three opportunities. Came up empty. Credit Kingsburg's defense. Did a great job. There was actually a block kick. Kerman went to tie the football game. I think it was about a 28-yarder. Wasn't very close or wasn't very far away at all. Blocked the kick. The defense held strong. So, yeah, really good win for Kingsburg, especially without their quarterback. Without their quarterback. David Muxlow filled in, started at linebacker. They moved in a quarterback, did a good job. Threw a nice touchdown pass, their only touchdown pass or touchdown of the game to Levi Wilson on a fourth down, I think from the 15-yard line. So, good win for Kingsburg. Kerman, you know, they're still one of the favorites in D3, D3 defending champs. But last night was Kerman's night. I want to give a special shout-out. So these stats that I get from the Central East games and from Justin Garza, too, come from our dude who's getting married today. You guys know him and love him. Ace Landucci does a great job on the PA system as well. Gets stats out there. Getting married today, so that's why he's not in town. But, yeah, have a great day, my friend. All right, we're going to take a break here, and I'm gonna go over the scoreboard from the last couple nights. There was a few upsets, a few surprises there with big implications moving forward. All right, we'll take a break here. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back. I mentioned First String Sports, man. You got all your sporting good needs, but we have a lot of fun here throwing the football around, trying not to knock over equipment. I did hear something fall in the background, but I think it was a baseball bat, so it's all good. But First String Sports is where I do my show. We talk about high school sports from 10 to 12 every Saturday morning, and I love breaking down football games the best I can. We have a huge slate of games played last night. 53 games played last night. There were a few that were played on Thursday. Of note, McLean defeated Sanger West 49-14, undefeated. Highlanders, amazing. Amazing season so far. They beat Roosevelt, which was going to be the best game in the NYL, beating 42-0. They're going to be a high seed. They might get bumped up to D3, base D4 team. But, yeah, they got some dudes over there, some very talented wide receivers. Wasco defeated Taft, no surprise there, 56-0. Liberty of Bakersfield defeated Centennial Thursday night, 49-20. That's only Liberty's second win this season. They need three. They have Garces and Stockdale to end the year. Stockdale's an automatic win in the final game. Stockdale's not good this year. Garces, that's going to be a tough game. How about this? Liberty might not even make the playoffs. Unheard of. Unreal. Exeter defeated Hanford West 40-0. The game that I mentioned, Central East over Clovis West 46-39. And last night, I mentioned Bullard defeated Garza 30-21. So two in a row for the Bullard Knights. We're going to be hearing from Coach Franklin at the bottom of hour number two at around 11:35. San Joaquin Memorial. How about this? 96 points total in their win over Madera, 50-46. Points aplenty in that one. Look at the Panthers, putting up a lot of points. Got to dive a little bit deeper into Memorial this year. Haven't given them a lot of love, but big win for them. Sanger over Edison, 36-27. That was a one-point game at one point. In East Sequoia League action, Strathmore defeated Granite Hills, 28-12. Orosi all over Corcoran, 41-13. And Woodlake bounces back with a 41-6 win over Farmersville. Redwood 26, Golden West 14. Cam Worrell was at that game last night. So after the break, we're going to talk to Cam about that one. But that's two losses in a row for Golden West. So I predicted a few weeks ago they might go 10-0. Well, shoot, throw that out the window. Two losses for Golden West. Porterville still scoring points, 58-6 over LD. In the Mountain Range, upset. All right. How about this? Been pumping up St. Joseph a lot this year. Aurora Grande took care of business in a 30-7 victory. 30-7. So we're going to take a deeper dive into playoff projections the next couple of weeks. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that's going to do with St. Joseph. They're based D1, so it's going to obviously bump them down a little bit. But Rio Grande is going to be bumped up. North Yosemite League action. Hoover with a nice 44-14 win over Torres. Roosevelt took out their frustrations on Madera South 55-0. Sunnyside 42, Fresno High 0. Fowler gets a win 21-14 over Riverdale. Liberty Madera 48, Parlier 6. We're going to hear from Coach Nolte around 11:45. Minarets with a good comeback win, according to Max Preps. They were down in this one 36-26 over Chowchilla. Shafter and Kennedy. That was a game on our radar. Talked to Coach Perucci last week. Always a battle with those guys. No love lost between those two schools. Shafter with a 42-35 victory over Kennedy. That was a 42-28 game at one point. I think it was tied at halftime, but really good win for Shafter South Sequoia League. Scroll down a little bit. Frontier defeated Garces 27-13. All of a sudden, Frontier is now 4-4 on the season. And one of the games that we had our eye on down in the South Valley, Bakersfield Christian came back to defeat Bakersfield High 16-14. Not sure how they scored their last touchdown, but it was a 14-7 game. I know Bakersfield Christian has a Division I level place kicker, so maybe there's a field goal in there to or a two-point conversion. But anyway, big win. Big win for the Flying Eagles, Darren Carr and crew. Independence defeated Highland 34-14. The Kerman and Kingsburg game that we were at last night, Kingsburg comes away with a 10-7 victory. Washington Union 33, Reedley 0. So the Panthers shut out the Pirates. In Tri-County Sequoia action, Selma defeated Sierra Pacific in a tight one, 23-20. And a couple track games I haven't mentioned yet. Buchanan defeated Clovis North for their first win of the track, 30-20. Clovis North now falls to 0-3 in the track play after starting the year off 5-0. And those Clovis Cougars defeated Clovis East 42-15. Clovis is rolling. I think there's a clear cut 1 and 2. They're going to be facing off next week. Man, we're going to be hyped for that game. We're going to be talking about it all week as well. That's going to be a barn burner. Excited to watch that game. I'm going to bring on Tanvir, who is producing the show this morning. He was able to check out that Clovis and Clovis East game. Saw a few highlights on TV as well. Deegan Rose was doing his thing. Israel Briggs, saw him make a catch as well. So, Tanvir, first of all, thanks for producing the show. You're doing a great job as always. What are your main takeaways from that football game last night?
Yeah, my main takeaways, I mean, I felt like this Clovis East team had the opportunities to stay with Clovis High, especially in that first half, but they just were not able to convert their opportunities on the offensive side of the ball because, you know, with Clovis High, I feel like this is a team that you need to keep up with. You can't really just sit there, not be able to score points, and expect a defense to just keep this Clovis High offense shut down for an entirety of a game. You saw that they put up 42 points. I think Clovis High really set the tone early. Deegan Rose, I thought, was sharp from the start. He converted a gutsy 4th and 12 to Israel Briggs and later punched in the opening touchdown on the ground by himself on this scramble. So the Cougars offense really did capitalize on some clutch moments early on in the game. While I thought the Timberwolves defense did hang tough early, but again, as I said, offensively, I thought they were not able to convert. Lindsey Graves and Jamie Spurgeon, I thought they did create some flashes and success outside of the tackles, but I think penalties and their first drive ending in a botched field goal snap and then having a missed field goal two drives later, these kind of missed red zone points really kept them chasing throughout the entire game. On defensive side of the ball for Clovis East, I thought the front seven really did bottle up James Caruso for a majority of that first half, but he really did break out in the second half. As I said, you can't really contain these guys. You got to just keep up with them and then be able to pull it out in the end. The defense also did force two fumbles on Deegan Rose, but Clovis High was able to recover those, and they were out in front for the majority of the game. And what I think really broke this game open was it was 14-0. We're going into halftime, and Clovis High had an opportunity from the 20-yard line with 10 seconds left. They threw it deep, didn't complete it, but there was a penalty. With 2 seconds left from the 10, instead of going for a field goal, they went for a touchdown, and they actually got it, and they increased the lead from 2 touchdowns to 3 touchdowns right at the end of half, and that I thought was a back-breaking swing of the entire night. So a big game for Clovis High. I felt like Clovis East could have stuck with them a little bit if they were able to convert on their offensive opportunities, but you can't really keep up with this Clovis High team if you're not scoring points.
Yeah, so Deacon Rose obviously on point. I don't think he's had a bad game all season, setting up that big matchup next week against Central East. Do you like – you've watched Central East at least once this year?
Yeah, I watched them in the first game.
First game of the year, all right. Yep. How colossal of a matchup is that going to be next week? There's going to be a lot of eyes up and down the state keeping watching this game as well, seeing that's play out. Hey, 1 versus 2, that's always going to be a great game. What are your initial thoughts about that matchup?
Oh, I think both of these defenses are going to get tested early and often. And it's pretty interesting because both teams kind of have different philosophies in terms of how they want to get the offense going. I feel like Clovis High, they love to do a lot of these quick passes, short passes, and supplement the running game to try and hit down the field deep, while I think Central East has the ability to hit on those big plays from the jump. And so yeah. I think it's going to be a nice clash of offenses. I think both of these defenses are pretty good, and we'll see how they are able to keep up with these wide receivers on both sides of the field.
Elite players all over the field next Friday. Yep. You got Caruso, who's tearing it up, Deegan Rose, Briggs, Carlos Young is a dude seeing his highlights every week. On the flip side, Brandon Smith, Tipple, Bayon Harris. My gosh, I can't remember a matchup I'm going to be more excited about. I mean, last year, there were some good games, but this year, I think that's the marquee game. All right, Tanvir, thanks. Hey, thanks for checking out that game, writing down some notes, and sharing what you were able to watch last night.
No problem.
All right, we got a few more minutes here before we take a break and bring on Cam Worrell. In the West Sierra League, Kalinga defeated Mendota 42-7. Fireball defeated Avenel. That game was in Avenel, 35-0. I was going to say at Josh Allen Field. I think they're going to be returning there next Friday. Hampered with a big win over Tulare Western, 55-14, coming off of that great win the week before over Tulare High. Lemoore came back to beat Dinuba 20-13, and Tulare Union took out their frustrations on Mission Oak by scoring 78 points and shutting them out. In non-league action, actually a crossover game, Emmanuel Eagles are now 8-0 after shutting out CVC 37-0. A lot of people were kind of back and forth on who was going to win that game, but Emmanuel, man, absolutely took it. The running game is something to be reckoned with for sure. So Emmanuel Eagles, one of the few undefeated teams. What, we got McLean, Liberty and Madera. I'm missing one more. All right, maybe I'll come back and remember who the other undefeated team. Ridgeview defeated Stockdale 22-0. Templeton over San Luis Obispo 48-7. All right, we'll take a break here and bring in Cam Worrell. We'll talk about Fresno State, what he saw last night between Redwood and Golden West. We'll talk about the Wave, right? What's up with the Wave? How are we going to curtail that monstrosity at Fresno State games? Well, if you're going to do it, at least do it when Fresno State's on defense. So always great to catch up with Cam. We're going to dive deep and do a few topics as well. All right, you're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I definitely want as much time as possible with Cam Worrell. I wasn't able to have him on the show last year, so we got to make up for lost time. You guys know him from broadcasting Fresno State games, a Chowchilla alum, City, Fresno State, NFL veteran of the Bears and Dolphins, part of the broadcast team for on the CW as well. Cam, good morning, man. I really appreciate you jumping on with me and chop it up. We got a solid 20 minutes to talk about a lot of stuff. So how you doing this morning?
Oh, what's up, man? I'm great. Can't say that a non-Fresno State football Saturday, I wake up with the same energy, but yeah, it's nice to lounge around a little bit on a Saturday and kind of check college football out.
Isn't it weird? Yeah, right? Like, you know, during football season, you have this internal clock. You're like, hey, I just want to make it to Friday. That means I'm getting to Saturday. That means I'm getting to Sunday NFL football. And when there's no Fresno State game, it is a little different, right? You wake up, you're like, I got some things to look forward to, but not as much as Fresno State football, especially, right, we want to get back on the field and prove everybody that last week wasn't the Fresno State team that we are anticipating, at least for that game. So you get a little bit of an empty feeling, but a good day to catch up and rest up a bit too, right?
Yeah, just different, right? I mean, especially, you know, football has been such a huge part of my life. Going back to 1996 with that, it's almost 30 years. I mean, going back almost 30 years, the fall for me has been, like, football has been the constant. So it's just normal to wake up and anticipate a game day experience and prepare for a game, obviously in different roles throughout the years. But it just, yeah, I was talking to my wife yesterday about, you know, just how our falls have been dominated by football. And then our older daughter was a soccer player. So, you know, fall meant a lot of soccer when she was a kid. So just kind of juggling all that. A bye week back then meant that, oh, if my daughter's in Davis, I can go to Davis and watch her, you know? So it meant some different things. And now, yeah, I wake up and you're like, okay, kind of lounge around and gonna go see my grandma in Chowchilla and just have a nice little relaxing day.
All right, I like it. And when Coach Hill's on our Friday broadcast, we always got to talk a little bit about his grandsons and soccer Saturdays getting up. Oh, I got a game at 9, I got a game at 11. Yeah, so Pat Hill goes to his grandson's soccer games, and we kind of miss that too, right? You're a girl dad, I'm a girl dad. Those innocent days of playing soccer on Saturday mornings, you kind of dread it back then, but I miss those days, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you have so many experiences with your kids, and you create these kind of rituals or traditions, and it's just kind of what you do. And, you know, everybody kind of gets in that mode. And yeah, like, you don't want to wake up after a late night. We got back from Fort Collins. I think Pat dropped me off at like 2 o'clock in the morning. He's like, well, I got eight o'clock soccer in the morning, but, you know, got to get up. So,
got to get up.
You know, just still doing it. So, yeah, you do miss those times because, you know, those tired times where, you know, you probably don't want to be up, but you are up. And so you're just kind of more open to whatever the experience is going to be and, you know, get to spend that time with your kids and the family's rooting them on, and it's just kind of this bonding experience. You know, those fall Saturdays with the kids or fall spring days with the kids, yeah, you definitely miss them once they're gone.
I agree. All right, so you had a game last night, Redwood and Golden West. Hey, you knew how good Redwood could be this year. We've seen the offensive prowess of Golden West. They lost last week, which surprised me. Their defense didn't show up, gave a lot of points up to Porterville. Rangers come away with a nice win. What are some of your takeaways from that football game last night?
Yeah, man, what a physical football game. I mean, by far the most physical high school game that I've seen in 2025. They're just two teams that kind of pride themselves on being more physical than their opponent. And that, I mean, 10-7 at the half, Redwood was up, but it wasn't bad offense. It was just better defense. And you don't always get that in high school, right? There's a lot of lack of execution that leads to the inability to score, but these two defenses were flying around last night. And then, you know, Curtis Allen, who's down at Redwood, who, you know, we all know Curtis from back in the day, Fresno State. He actually coached me at Fresno City back in 2000. I mean, you know, coached at COS, so extremely experienced, understands the game. And Redwood came out in the second half, and they just took the physicality up to another level and really just kind of wore that Golden West defense down. Redwoods big up front. They were just moving guys around. Luke Sanchez, who stepped in at quarterback, who's, you know, had been the quarterback the last couple of years, switched over to safety. It was a better fit for him maybe moving forward. I mean, he stepped in and operated that offense, used his legs quite a bit. So it was, man, it was a well-played football game. You know, Visalia Unified versus Visalia Unified. You know, those when those inter-district matchups, there's always a little bit of a different energy, right? There's guys all know each other. They've competed against each other for years. So it's just a little bit more bad blood. It was fantastic. Packed stands on both sides. The fans showed up. It was electric. It was a really, really fun high school environment last night.
Well, we did the Hanford and Redwood game earlier in the season. And, you know, obviously Visalia, they don't have a huge market as far as radio or anything like that. The Visalia Times Delta actually does a really good job covering high school sports. But, gosh, if you haven't been to a game down in that area in a while, the fans come out. I mean, it's a great environment to watch a football game.
Yeah, I was so happy. I mean, Visalia Community Stadium, it's a pretty good sized stadium, and it was packed on both sides. Redwood fans on the visitor side, Golden West fans on the home side. Yeah, the stands were full and people were engaged the whole time. I mean, cheering and, you know, booing when they thought it was appropriate. It was a really, really fun high school environment. So yeah, the Visalia fans definitely showed up last night.
So Thursday night was a really good football game between Central East. I'm getting better at saying Central East and Clovis West. Studs all over the football field. I mean, J.J. Howard, Brandon Smith, back and forth. A great equalizer is a really good running game, and Central East certainly has that. Kyle Biggs wins his 100th game, playing Clovis High next week for probably the number one seed. Lots of storylines, but gosh, what a program Central East has in Coach Kyle Biggs. What's kind of been your main takeaways from watching that program over the years?
Yeah, we all need to get better at saying Central East. So you're we're all in the same boat with you, Paul, for sure. And the Bengals, not the Grizzlies anymore. The Bengals,
right.
Which I'm glad they have the helmets because it's easy to remember. You know, I think Central for a long time, you know, had talented players and just seemed like they couldn't put it all together, right? There was something missing, whatever it was. It just, things were not quite clicking, and they could go on runs, but they weren't consistent. And I think Kyle has just come in and really just connected with the Central community. You know, he's pretty straightforward about who he is. You know, he doesn't hide what he's trying to do and what he's all about. And I think just that genuineness about him, it gets people to buy in. When you think, you know, the person who is leading you is telling you the truth, even if it doesn't sound good at the moment, but you know that all their intention is to help you be the best version of yourself, I think guys can buy in. You know, guys can – Brandon Smith will go both ways. You know, he's committed, and he's a fantastic high school player. You could say, no, I don't want to play defense, but he doesn't. He plays defense. So I think Kyle does a great job of allowing guys to be successful, puts them in position to be successful, but also just breathes that, hey, if we all sacrifice just a little bit, then we can have this team success. And tell you, individual success is cool, but there is no thing that is greater than team success in football. I mean, I think it's the best in sports, and Kyle has been able to instill that mentality in that Central East program.
100 wins, man, that's pretty good. If you look at his year-by-year record, he's got nothing. There's definitely nothing close to being under 500. You see 10 wins. You see that 2019. 13-0, wait, or maybe it was 15-0. I don't know. I mean, undefeated team. So he definitely knows what he's doing. So you mentioned the transition to college. He gets guys ready for college, you know, with Xavier Worthy, Trent Tompkins, Jalen Johnson. I mean, the list goes on with those dudes. And, you know, your success in the NFL, but you had a different journey too, right? Going to small school at Chowchilla, going to Fresno State, then back to City, then to Fresno State again. You know, when you see, you know, guys that have talent, seniors, like, hey, they're going to a pretty big D1 school. What's like something that if you had a chance to talk to them about, or what's something that they might be really surprised at the D1 level? What would you tell them?
Man, yeah, I think I would tell them, you know, that once you get an opportunity, which, you know, if you sign a letter of intent and you're on a college roster, that's an opportunity, right? Once you get an opportunity, what you did to create that opportunity is kind of irrelevant, right? What you did in high school was cool. It gave you this opportunity, but this is different now. And to take advantage of that opportunity, you have to work harder than you ever thought you needed to work, right? You have to try and do everything that you're in control of at the highest level possible. There's no shortcuts. There's no days off. I mean, yeah, there are days off, but if you have a workout, if you have a run, if you have an assignment, you have to execute those to the best of your ability every single time you do anything. And if you continue to do that day in and day out, and you just stack those days on top of each other, eventually you're going to get your shot. And if you've worked that way up until that point, when you get that shot, you will be ready for that shot and you will be able to take advantage of that opportunity. I think if I could distill down, you know, all these years of going through that and watching younger people and coaching a couple years at Fresno City and then watching guys at Fresno State throughout the years, that's what guys who are successful do, right? They don't really pay attention to their circumstances. They don't really pay attention to what their current opportunity is. They just show up every single day, put the hard hat on, and just work. And I feel like football, life, fatherhood, you know, being a husband, whatever it is that you do, if you do it that way, you're going to be successful in life.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And you've definitely seen the ups and downs of what football can give a certain any yeah. individual, especially those with talent. And yeah, appreciate those thoughts. Hey, you know, there is a topic though, Cam, that's very controversial right now. You know, it's brought a lot of dissension, some enemies. And I'm talking about the wave at Fresno State football games, right? You know, you and I are kindred spirits. So I listen to the broadcast with you, right? There's like a 45-second delay listening to your broadcast and watching it live at games. I see you down on the sidelines, right? And that, you know, I don't cuss, right? I could cuss right now, but I could get in trouble. That bleeping wave starts kind of near my section, and I try to stand firm, and I heard you talk about it. They got to know when the wave is. So what are we going to do about this, Cam? How are we going to start a revolution here? Resist.
We need to talk to the Valley Children's Stadium operator, and we need a public address announcement that there is no wave allowed when Fresno State is on offense. There's no wave allowed when we're on offense. If you want to do it when we're on defense and make a lot of noise, that's totally fine. But when we have the ball, please be engaged in what is happening during the game, because noise when we're on offense is not helpful.
Thank you.
It's not helpful to the offense at home. So we need a public address announcement. We need to make sure we tamp that wave down. And maybe when the Bulldogs are on defense and there's a timeout, we can get the wave going and the stadium can get their wave fill without doing it when the dogs are on offense.
I agree 100%. The public service, and maybe we can rent an airplane, right, and kind of have the sign, you know, how they do that.
Yes.
And right? Yeah, there's lots of things we can do. All right, so we're on the same page of that. I'm going to try to start a revolution. And, you know, you got to stand up. You got to stand up.
Abolish the wave on offense. That's our message. Abolish the wave on offense. Whatever we need to do, let's go.
All right, we got about 5 more minutes with Cam Orrell. Cam, I got to hear a couple a Pat Hill story, right? We know and love him. I got to tell you this, too. You and Paul and Pat on air are absolutely phenomenal, man. When you guys are chopping it up and digging at each other, that's what people want to hear. It's great stuff. It's very entertaining, and it's a lot of fun.
Awesome.
But, you know, what's something that you can share about Pat and just what a great individual he is?
Oh, man, a positive Pat Hill story?
Yeah, give me something funny. We've heard about, you know, punching through some, you know, chalkboards and whatnot. We've heard that kind of stuff. But what else you got?
Man, you know, I think the people that – what people know about Pat Hill is not really who Pat Hill is. And you know Pat. You've been doing games with them for years, so you see who Pat really is. I mean, he was tough to play for as a coach. He was tough in the media. I mean, he had that stance. He was an undersized offensive lineman, so he was an underdog his whole life. So all he's done is fight, right, to put himself in position to be successful. So I think he wore that on his sleeve. But when you get to actually know him, he's just a grandpa now.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he is. He's a grandpa. He's the epitome of a grandpa. But waking up early, going and supporting his grandkids, spending time with his family, like, those are the most important things to him. There are a lot of things that he could talk about his time at Fresno State, and he doesn't. You know, he loves Fresno State so much, and he would be totally justified to tell his story, his experience. He could tell his story, and, you know, a lot of it would not look good for the university, and he's never done that because he has such a high bar of character. If he says something to you, he's going to do it, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If he puts his word out there, he's going to follow through. So, yeah, he's so cool to be around. He's so fun. We have a blast. I mean, I'm so thankful that we've been able to develop this relationship, because we didn't get along when I played for him, and it's because we're very similar in the way that we are. And so to now have this friendship with him, it's been really, really cool.
That's awesome. We've got a couple minutes here with you, Cam. I don't think I've ever asked you this question, but who is the fastest player you've ever seen on a football field? Like, somebody like, ooh, oh my gosh, who is that?
I mean, I played with a few. Ted Ginn was the absolute fastest player that I ever saw in person. I mean, shocking speed. Danielle Manning was a safety with the Bears, also shocking speed. Devin Hester could get up to full speed about as fast as anybody that I ever played with, and he was like 210 pounds, so he was just a freak of nature. But the most impressive speed athlete I ever played with or saw was Randy Moss, like, without a doubt. He could just run as fast as he needed to run to make a play. And, like, he was 6'4", and he was 220 pounds, and he could do everything. Randy Moss, by far, was the toughest dude that I ever had to play against. That's why he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, if someone goes over the top of you, it's still called getting Moss, even though he has not played football in a long time. That's the impact that he had on the game. So, yeah, a lot of dudes that can roll.
That's a good one. All right, I got 1 minute, and I know you wish you had 5 minutes, but the job that Tim Skipper has done at UCLA, what can you say about watching him?
I'm just so happy for him. The whole world gets to see what he's all about, man. Every single day, just infectious positivity. That's it. That's what he is. And that UCLA program, I watched them against New Mexico, and they looked like they didn't want to even be on the field. And to go from that to you know, 2 weeks later, knocking off a top 10 Penn State team and then going on the road and getting a win. I'm so happy for him. He looks so in control. He looks so comfortable with himself. I think he learned so much in his time at Fresno State last year that he's using this year, and he knows how to get the job done now, and he's going out and getting the job done. I could not be more happy for that dude.
I agree. I love here.
He's a great individual and just love to see his success.
Absolutely. We're all definitely rooting for him. We love that guy. Hey, Cam, thanks for jumping on. Wish we had more time. Always great to chop it up with you and catch up. Enjoy visiting your mom in Chowchilla today and chilling a little bit and then getting back after it next week. Appreciate you, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you, man. Keep up the great work.
All right, good stuff. Cam Worrell, we're going to take a break. We got Jackson Moore coming on the show. We're going to be talking some more high-level recruits going on in the Central section. You're listening to On the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN.
From Clovis to Kingsburg, from Fresno to Bakersfield and everything in between, we've got you covered. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, your number one source for high school highlights, riveting talk, and hometown heroes. And here is your host, Paul Metters.
Hour number two, the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. It never fails, right? I kind of speak it into existence a little bit with the Letterman's jackets. And, I see one, two laid out there near the cash registers getting all hooked up. So this is definitely the place to get yours completed. We broadcasted the Kingsburg and Kermit game, and even the band members have Letterman's jackets. Hey, it's all equal here, equal rights here with the Letterman's jackets. They don't discriminate, right? Anybody could pick one up. Great conversation so far with Cam Worrell last segment. If you missed any part of any of the shows, you can go to 1430ESPNFresno.com under podcasts, and all the shows are there. Right, you listen to the back episodes as well. So thank you guys for listening. I really enjoy what I do. I've got a lot of great people here in the Central Valley, a lot of great athletes, and we love to shine a light on all of that. Jackson Moore, I think we do this, at least twice a year? Yeah, sometimes in the spring we'll bring Jackson on and talk about Fresno State Athletics, 247 Sports, college football and recruiting reporter. Picked up that Oregon contract, huh? That's good stuff. We'll talk about that a little bit. DuckTerritory.com and, of course, Fresno State coverage for the Bark Board. So, Jackson, I asked Cam this question, and he kind of had the same feeling. When you wake up on a Saturday and you feel like Fresno State has already had their bye week and they're not playing football, it's a little bit different, right? You're like, yeah, I know you got a lot of other stuff to cover, but are you kind of hoping Fresno State would play, but they're not? It's kind of a weird feeling sometimes.
Yeah, especially if we've already had a bye. And then last week, I was in Fort Collins for the game at Colorado State, fly home Saturday morning, and I'm just on my couch the rest of the day, right, watching college football, and I feel like I'm right back to it today. But as you mentioned, I got a little bit of Oregon Ducks to watch later on and try to multitask with the Fresno State men's basketball matinee madness this afternoon. So still a bit going on, but it does feel a little weird, and to know but in 3 weeks, we'll be doing this again with another 5 weeks.
Right? So what's going on this afternoon? I saw the tweet, but I couldn't quite gather what's happening with the basketball programs.
Yeah, so at the Save Mart Center, at least the men's basketball team, as far as I know, is going to be out there practicing a little scrimmage, a little show for the fans. So it should be free attendance and chance to see this team because there's only like three returners from last year. So a lot of new faces to get to know.
I saw three of the players at Pyology at Campus Point last week, and it was pretty funny. I went up to them and talked to them a little bit, and one of them had to translate what he wanted on his pizza for the other one. It was pretty fun to watch. It was like a 6'11 guy, and he's translating for somebody else. So that was fun. But yeah, it's definitely going to be a different look for the Fresno State men's basketball program. We're going to talk about a lot of the Valley football players and where their standings are as far as recruitment, and then the some of the current players on the roster that we love to follow. But let's start with Deegan Rose, right? Big announcement a few weeks ago, flipping from Oregon State, which that had disaster written on it from week one this year. flipping to Fresno State. It was really quick, right? You saw it on Twitter, I think in the morning, that he decommitted, said his recruitment is open, and then later that night you see, I'm committed to Fresno State. So obviously there is a lot of talk, a lot of discussion. It just wasn't a quick decision. All right, so, like, what do you understand about some of his decisions into flipping to Fresno State, and what kind of a quarterback do you think they're getting?
Yeah, it was a quick series of events, but Fresno State had been at this for a while. You know, its new coaching staff comes in. You knew he was committed to Oregon State before Coach Ince and this crew even got here, and you didn't know there wasn't many local ties from the new guys, how much they'd pursue him. And I think once they got to see him on the camp circuit, it was like, all right, what can we do to get this guy to stay home, keep him from Oregon State? And they were at it heavily. In the summer, they made a really big push. They were trying to get him on campus for a visit. They had him for the 7-on-7 tournament, which Clovis High won, and he was spectacular. And so they got to have some one-on-one time with him after that, since they were the last team on the field. And there was just a lot of effort there. And talking to Deegan myself, it just kind of felt like there was something there kind of in the back of his mind, whether it was going to work out or not. It seemed like he was thinking about it. So 0-6 at Oregon State, I just think, was the domino that pushed this all into motion.
Like, what physical talents do you think he's going to bring? Does he fit the Matt End system? You know, seeing a lot of his football games from his freshman year, short game is good, intermediate is good, throws a pretty good deep ball. Like, does he fit the system in your opinion?
I believe so. You know, he's got some mobility, but he's not the fastest guy. And this is going to be more of a pro-style offense as we're seeing. And I think, you know, from what I've seen from Deegan, if he's got a clean pocket, it's on the money, like 90% of the time. I mean, he throws a great ball. So if he can just kind of have one or two reads, clean pocket, and just sling it, I mean, it's going to be really good for him. And, you know, we'll see then what is tough for any quarterback is if it's third and long and there's pressure. We're seeing this current Bulldog team's not really handling that all that well, but, you know, he might have a little something special to get the Bulldogs out of those spots.
Any other quarterbacks recruited by Fresno State? Any other commitments?
That's the interesting part about this process is, you know, right up until the end of June, they were going after Deegan, and then it seemed like it was like, all right, he's sticking with Oregon State. Let's get our next guy, and that was Jacob Chambers out of Rancho Cucamonga, who is still committed and still having a really good season, and he flipped from Sac State to Fresno State. So I think it's not as big of a deal with NIL because, I mean, let's say Deegan, well, what if he starts in his first 2 years, and by year three he has a huge season, and some school comes out with a big NIL deal, and you've got Jacob Chambers waiting. He's still got 2 years of eligibility, you know, all hypothetical, but I don't think it's something that's going to scare him off, perhaps.
And I know he was going to do this at Oregon State, but I would think he's going to be an early enrollee. Is that what you understand, too, or not?
I have not confirmed,
okay.
So I don't want to say for sure, but I know he loves his baseball.
I know,
if he stays for that last semester, I'm sure he would enjoy playing baseball.
Yeah, he might. We'll see on that. I knew that he wanted to be an early enrollee at Oregon State, so we'll see how that goes. All right, Jackson, so who's some more some Valley kids that are committed to Fresno State? I know there's some underclassmen, juniors and sophomores that have been offered. You know, J.J. Howard from Clovis West, who's an absolute dude. R.J. Jefferson, wide receiver for West as well. There's a few other kids that have offers, right?
Yeah, well, as far as the 26 class, I think Rose is also a big deal because there's kind of this group of elites every year in the Valley, and now the Bulldogs have one of those, so, you know, you always feel good if you keep one of the big fish home. And, you know, there's it's a deeper class this year, I feel like, and with the coaching change, and a lot of these guys end up at Power Four schools, they were in the hunt for a lot of them and didn't quite finish, so to get Rose is a big deal. And then Zephaniah Cisse is kind of right on that edge. We've got him as an 86 rating, which is pretty high as far as the three-star tier goes and as far as Valley kids go. And I know Syracuse came in with an offer late, and I'm curious. I would assume that came from Kevin Coyle, who's at UCLA now, so I'm curious if the Bruins might be taking a look at him. But he's a big deal for Fresno State.
Linebacker, right?
Yeah, linebacker at Redwood High. Just a missile out there. He's really fun to watch, real physical. And he was at that 7-on-7 tournament making Odell Beckham, like, one-handed catches, like, crazy plays out there. So that was cool. And then Franklin Lockhart at Tulare Union, he's one of those guys that hadn't quite broken out, he wasn't even healthy over the summer, and you just look at him and it's like, all right, what offers does he have? What do you mean he doesn't have offers? You know, so I think Fresno State took him pretty much on the eye test, and it looks like he'll be a nickelback for Fresno State. And then Maddox Madsen, the running back at Clovis High, is going to walk on as well. So there's four immediately local players, a couple more in Modesto. You know, there's going to be a Valley Flair in this class, and it's going to be a big class. They've got 24 commits and maybe a couple more by the time it's all said and done. Wouldn't be surprised if Malcolm Watkins over at Frontier becomes an option.
Really? All right.
I know he's still committed to Oregon State, but yeah. Bulldogs were going for him very hard, so I assume they'll be making another push there. And then the 2027 class, as you mentioned, a couple of – well, and 28. It's been interesting to see Coach Entz. Like, he makes the offers pretty much himself, whether it's on the phone to a kid across the country or it's right here. And there's some videos of him with JJ and Rolando just like, hey, this is what we're about. You know, Valley kids aren't leaving anymore. They're going to wear that four paw, you know, like this big rah-rah kind of thing. So that's been cool to see. Demaje Riley decommitted from UCLA over at Tulare Union. He would be spectacular. Fresno
State. I think he decommitted before Skipper took over.
Yeah,
am I right on that?
I believe so.
Okay.
So just, man. An electric athlete. If he was 6 foot, he would be like a five-star recruit. I think just the fact that he's 5'9" is the only dig on him, because he is just spectacular with the ball in his hands. They've offered some O-linemen, Turlock, Hillmar, Bakersfield in this class for 2027. Grant Moser, Buchanan's one that they got on early. So they've only got 15, 20 known 2027 offers, and like half of them are for the Valley. So
nice.
It's been really neat to see Coach Entz, not from here, but really embrace and do all the right things on that side.
Well, the relationships are big, right? And, you know, Coach Entz, you know, he's, you know, I've met him once. He's a very personal guy. How do you feel like he's become acclimated to the Valley? Do you think, you know, when he arrives on campus, you know, or calling high school coaches, you think those relationships are really being built? He's making a conscious effort to do that?
I think so. I think watching him on the recruiting trail when he first got here, it seemed like John Baxter was by his side wherever stop they made. So I think that's been a big help. And then J.D. Williams, of course, he's got a lot of local ties, obviously, and to keep him, I think, was a big deal. And then, as you mentioned, he's just kind of saying the right things. And it seems genuine. You know, it doesn't seem like he's got cliff notes and he's repeating them. It just seems like this is the guy he is, and he was a really good fit for what this program's known for and the culture. And the last step is just winning over fans, and I think he had done that at 5-1, you know, maybe 5-2 after this last game. There's a little bit of skepticism, but there's a real chance for them to really finish out strong this season if they can fix some things offensively.
You want to get into that a little bit?
Sure.
All right. Just a little bit. I would definitely want to talk about the kids that are currently on the team. All right, so 5-2 last week, the clunker on Friday night. Like, if you would have said, hey, they're 5-2 at the beginning of the season, you would have been like, hey, that sounds pretty good, right? Nothing wrong with 5-2.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you looked at the schedule on the road, knowing there was pretty much no easy road wins on the schedule. So to get 2 out of 4 in the greater scheme of things is pretty solid. Going to Hawaii and winning, even at Oregon State, I think the Beavers are winless, I think, more of a product of their schedule. They've had a pretty tough schedule. They don't have a conference really this season, so they've been playing a lot of tough teams. It's been, you know, it's just obviously everyone has a sour taste in their mouth after this Colorado State game. And I don't think it's probably as bad as it looked. I think it really got away from them quick. Just a few key plays within the first about 10 minutes really dug them in. But also, they weren't necessarily dominant, you know, when all things were even, like we thought they would against a team that only had one win. So I'm curious. There could be some changes going into the San Diego State game next week. And, I mean, really what they do these next two games is going to tell the story, I think, for this season. And how much momentum this program can continue right now.
Well, you can't tease me and tease our listeners saying there could be some changes, right? You want to expand on that a little bit? What can you share with us?
Well, you know, Coach Entz hasn't talked to the media or anything all week,
all right.
So until Monday, so nothing on the record, but have been hearing, you know, they're tinkering with some things during the bye week, and We'll see if they let anything loose on Monday.
All right. There you go. All right. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's talk about some kids currently on the roster, guys have got some major playing time. Bryson Donaldson. A lot of people expected huge things from him. We saw flashes last year. You know, a lot of us saw what he did in the high school rankings. A little bit of hit and miss this year, right? I think getting past that first line of scrimmage, trying to get to that second level, has been a little bit of difficult situation for him. But you know, he's a dude that can be explosive at times. What's kind of been your overall assessment of Bryson's season so far?
Yeah, definitely started stronger. It's been a little slower the last couple of games. I think. You know, teams have just been really loading the box and making life difficult for the Bulldog running game, and they haven't been able to really get teams out of that, unfortunately. And it's probably a bit frustrating for Donaldson. We know he's capable of a lot more. I think also kind of the bittersweet thing is that Rayshon Speedy Luke has kind of, with similar blocking, been able to put up bigger plays and bigger numbers. So, I mean, it's awesome that the Bulldogs have the two of them. It's just a little surprising that he's kind of leapfrogged him a little bit in there. And then Brandon Ramirez, the three of those guys pretty much split reps evenly against Colorado State, and that trend may continue because Brandon has been very solid when he's been in there, and Donaldson hasn't quite hit the highs that we've expected. So I think we're going to continue to see those three guys play quite a bit together, and hopefully they can do some things offensively to let the running backs a little more loose.
So let's talk about Brandon Ramirez. Watched him again in high school and knew the talent that he had. And, right, goes to Fresno State, and he went on record and said, hey, the old coaching staff said you should probably go somewhere else. And he stuck with it, and he's kind of a forgotten guy. Like, is Brandon going to see the field? Is he sticking with running back? Like, what's going to be his role? He's done some good things, man. That touchdown that got called back was at the Nevada game, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, that was disappointing. But, what's been your take on Brandon and, you know, his role with the team this year?
Well, I think he's perfect for this offense. I mean, he's just a bowling ball, it feels like, when they give him the ball. And it's more often than not, it's been working out. So I would love to see him get more opportunities. And, again, he did this past game. But it was kind of tough for the whole team, it felt like, in that game. It's been impressive to see him stick with it. And before this game, he's kind of almost been like a de facto fullback at times. He's had a role, maybe not necessarily getting the ball in his hand as much, but it feels like that Nevada game was kind of like, all right, we got to find a way to get this guy involved a little more. So, again, impressive to see. He's still really young, eligibility-wise. He's redshirted and
sophomore, right?
Missed a year with injury, too. So I think technically he might have three more years.
Nice.
So, which is also nice because the running back room feels loaded right now, but you got two guys graduating. Maybe one leaves with NIL and all that stuff. So it could thin out pretty quick. You got a loyal guy like that back there. That'll be nice to have coming back.
Cam Baraka, great story. Buchanan went through some injuries. Captain of the team. We see some highlight level interceptions as well. Just kind of what does he mean to the defense, not only on the field, but like in the locker room and, you know, as a captain? How have you seen his growth and what he brings to the program?
Yeah, definitely a leader out there. Always a fun interview, very mature for his age, and it's neat to see him. He's always got the most energy before the game, even though, as the captains, they don't really get to do the whole run out with the team.
Yeah,
they come out a little early, and he just brings the energy himself. So, he's a lot of fun to watch, and a guy that could have graduated last year had he not gotten injured at just the right time in the fourth week of the season. So got that extra season back, and I think it's been one of those blessing in disguise types of things when it was real bad for last year's team, but it's been really good that he's here now.
I agree. Great to watch Cam. And a couple other linebackers, local dudes, Logan Stute from Buchanan, Titus Kajavi from Clovis West. I've seen their numbers out there a little bit, heard their name on the PA system, making a few plays. So it's, young guys too as well. How do you see their roles this year and even moving forward?
Yeah, well, right now they're both the second team linebackers, and they are, there's one injury in front of them away from being the guy out there, which is almost a little scary if you're Fresno State's defense, just because Jaden Pearson and Kavion Thunderbird have been so good.
Yeah.
And as good as we know Logan Stute and Titus Kajavi are, to go from these veterans to redshirt freshmen that haven't played a lot of football, it could be troublesome. But Kajabi, he played most of the second half against Colorado State after Thunderbird got dinged up, and he handled himself very well. It was real funny hearing about his time at Hawaii, because during that week, that's when Tim Thomas left the team, who was the next linebacker. It was an older guy, and Thunderbird had that pick six. Yep. And Kajabi's celebrating, and the coach is like, hey, you know, he's going to be tired. You're going to have to go in there and play for him for a while after he did that play. So stop celebrating and get ready, you know. So it's been fun to see him mature so much in just the last two or three games alone. And then Stute really made big strides in the spring. I think he's been really ready for a while to be where he's at. He's behind Pearson. So both of those guys, they're up next. And Stute might be, whether it's at some point this year or it's next year, he's in line to start real soon.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Both those guys love to hit, man. They're not shy of contact. And you got to be. You're a linebacker. You're a dude. Right, so the freshman tackle from Buchanan, right, Braden Walton. That injury scared me. I thought he was done, right, when he went down, right? And for him to come back, his progression, Matt Hansen's gone on record saying, hey, an early enrollee, he put in his time. If he didn't do that, he probably wouldn't have been starting. Division I football is tough, right? Especially for someone like a late bloomer like Braden. But what have you seen from him that says, hey, that he could be something real special?
Yeah, just the fact that he's out there in the first place is impressive at his age, even with the early enrolling. You know, they did say he transformed his body quite a bit in those 6 months. And as mentioned, without that opportunity, might not be ready at this point. But I went out to watch him in high school, and the D end is like 5'10" local guy trying to rush him, and it's like he can't barely get his hands on him. Yeah. It's like how is this guy gonna even
push down on his shoulder pads? I mean, what are you doing here?
Exactly. So it's like, what is he even gonna know what to do when he gets to the college level and these formidable athletes are coming after him? So it's been really impressive to see him handle that. He hasn't. Not only did he earn the job, but he hasn't struggled by any means. And I think this offense is really good for those big tackles, him and Roland Fullwood. Unfortunately, Fullwood didn't play the last game, and Walton himself's been dinged up. So I think it's maybe hurt the line a little bit the last couple of games. But the two of them, when healthy, just 2 6'7", 330-pounders on the two ends of the line is such an asset for an offense like this.
And, right, 6'7", 325. Right, is that doesn't slump. Right, size does not slump, that's for sure. Jaden Mando, right, a quarterback, and also from Buchanan. A lot of Buchanan kids. What do you got? Logan, Cam, Walton, and Jaden Mando. Obviously not recruited by this current staff. Is he kind of like stuck in limbo? I know he got his chance in the bowl game last year. Like, where do you see him at right now?
Yeah, it's he's third in the pecking order from what we understand. Especially when I'm eligible. And the feedback I got, it's kind of funny, because in the spring, now all of a sudden it was kind of the mobile room. He can be a runner, be cannon, and be physical. It wasn't necessarily a game, but to these other two next Fresno State has been, I think, and some other things. So yeah, I mean, happened in the portal window, at least paper right now, be a little bit tough for him. Curious to see how it unfolds. I'm glad he's local, and every time I've seen him practice and
game, guy,
in the spring, it kind of seemed on the outs, and then you know, maybe the best out of three quarterbacks like that day. So when winning and potentially, chance he's gonna take advantage of it.
Yeah, great. Bulldog guy through and through. That was his dreams. Just hoping he gets it. A couple more questions. Thanks, Jackson, for joining us here at First String Sports. All right. Let's say Fresno State moving forward, realistic expectations. So we got San Diego State on the 25th. That's going to be a huge day honoring Jeff Tedford. Can't wait for that one. Then at Boise, Wyoming, Utah State, and then finishing at San Jose. Realistic expectation. What are some thoughts about those remaining games?
Yeah, when we looked at the schedule to start the season, there's first three games, it kind of felt like it could be 3-0 or 0-3. We didn't know exactly what to expect from Fresno State or any of those opponents. And, man, you look at these next five games, it just feels like there's so much parity. And especially, again, the way the Bulldogs looked the last time we saw them, you know, it's hard to be overly confident in them winning some of these tougher games. And, you know, you look at Wyoming and Utah State, both just knocked off San Jose State, who also the Bulldogs have to go to San Jose State. That's not going to be an easy game. So, and then the two tougher ones are obviously the next ones coming up. San Diego State's just on fire right now, and the Bulldogs are really going to have to kick it into gear in order to keep up with the Aztecs on next week. And Boise State hasn't looked overly impressive, but I think they're by far the most talented team in the conference. So, again, either got to catch them on the right day or figure some things out in the next 2 weeks, and then you've got to buy for the last three. So, I mean, there's really not an easy win there. There's not a game you say the Bulldogs can't win either. And, again, you look at the Mountain West, like 1 through 11 right now, you can't guarantee.
Yeah.
Which you kind of know Boise State and UNLV, those teams are going to pull it out, but every game feels like it's going to be a battle. And I think what we've seen from Fresno State is when they're in battles, they know how to win them. It's just they got to make sure they don't get knocked out early.
I agree. All right, Jackson, great stuff as always. Thanks for giving us some inside information about some of our Central Valley players that are playing for Fresno State and what to look forward to. Hey, always appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. And, good, have fun. Have fun the rest of the day.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, Jackson Moore. We're going to take a break. We're going to bring on Lewis Franklin, the head coach at Bullard High School. They had a nice win against Justin Garza last night. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report. Just had a good conversation with Jackson Moore, keeping up with all the local ties. A lot of Fresno State talk, but it was all tied into the Central Valley, right? We're equal opportunists here on 1430 ESPN. All right, we got Lewis Franklin on the line, Bullard head coach. Knights defeated Garza last night, 30-21, to improve to 4-4 on the season. More importantly, now 2-1. In the CMAC, coming off of that win against Madera a couple weeks ago as well. All right, so, Coach, great win last night, man. So how was your night last night, and how you doing this morning?
Doing great. Thanks, Paul. It's always, you know, a funner Friday night and easier to wake up on Saturday morning, you know, after a nice win against another tough league opponent.
So coming off that win against Madera, Sanger had to beat Garza in overtime. That was a really good football game we were able to watch. Game plan going into last night, what did you guys see in film? What did you guys think you had the advantage on, and how did you guys execute?
Saw him play a real tough game. You know, we knew it would be an emotional loss, so we wanted to start fast. And, you know, we were able to kind of do that early. We got up 10-0 at halftime. And, you know, we played better than the score had indicated, we felt. And just the message was at halftime is like, hey, we need to be the more physical team. We feel like playing a tough preseason like we did, it's prepared us for our league, and we feel better prepared this year than the years past. And, you know, we knew they had a really strong defensive line that kind of really dictates what they do defensively. And offensively, we knew we had to contain their quarterback, really good athlete. And makes a lot of plays with his feet, extending plays. So offensively, yeah, we did what we needed to do. We executed. We ran the ball well again. Two good games in a row. And then defensively, we did a great job in the first half, containing the quarterback. And then we let him make too many plays in the second half. That's why we gave up as many points as we did in the second half.
Yeah, that quarterback's legit. Bowden Smith is the name for Justin Garza. So who are some guys that clutched up for you? How'd you guys exactly score your touchdown? So you said you went up 10-0 early. So who played well for you guys?
Yeah, we just, you know, we self-study, and, we, you know, we in that first couple drives. We kind of had some tendencies that we wanted to break in the first drive. So we got a really nice little naked little boot for the quarterback to score. He ended up with two rushing touchdowns. Gavin, Kavuki, and Osborne had another rushing touchdown to end it, really, to put it up two possessions with under 3 minutes left in the game. And then in the middle of there, we had Tomas Dixon, who's just an absolute stud. He went and made another highlight reel catch kind of early in the third quarter there. So it was just it's a real balanced game. We're getting more balanced as we're getting guys healthy again on the offensive side. Unfortunately, we're not as lucky on the defense side. We've had a lot of guys that, you know, we've had to replace, you know, and they're stepping up, and we're responding well to adversity right now. So we're pretty happy where we're at.
So when you mentioned he, you didn't say his name. I don't do that on purpose. So your quarterback, your son, Tyler Franklin. So he had you feel like he is performing like what you expect? I know he's banged up a little bit in the middle of this season. So is he pretty much at where you would hope he would be at this point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly, Paul. I mean, it's you know, everyone's played 8 games. No one's going to be healthy at this point in the season. So we're not looking for any sympathy by any means. But, yeah, our quarterback, he got hurt in the first game, third quarter, and he had a nasty turf toe injury. And luckily we've been able to treat it and get him to a point where he's able to move again. And I think that's one of his strengths is being able to extend plays like Bowden Smith and, you know, also get some rushing yards. So we just selectively do that with him right now. It puts a little extra stress on the defense when we have – the talented group of receivers we do have that, you know, if you take away one thing, you're giving up something else. So there's a weakness to every defensive call we feel, and we just have to execute and take what's there.
I'm curious your philosophy on finding matchups during a game. Coach Hill talks about that a lot, about, right, putting advantages on your side, whether it's on the offensive line or whether it's setting up a receiver, putting a dude in motion. Is that kind of your offensive philosophy? So just trying to find the best matchups and trying to put your better guys against a weaker part of the defense?
Oh, for sure. You know, it's we understand the coaches in this area are great coaches, and they're going to do the best to take away your best player. So we still have to get our best guys involved. But I think, you know, one of the things since we've been down in this area, even back to Clovis West, is we're going to look for the best matchup. And, you know, we don't care how we score. We just care that we score. And it's just building that culture and that community and belief is as long as we're scoring, we're all happy. We know by the end of the season, 10 games, there's a lot of games, right? Some guys are going to go off this game, and then you might go off the next game. It's just, and it really is, like you said, Paul, it's just finding the matchups, you know, it's finding the best matchup for your team to have success for that week.
Let's go back a little bit, Coach. You know, after the bye week, you're starting off with Sanger, and the CMAC runs through Sanger, and deservedly so. Sanger's been really good the last 3 or 4 years. Heck, the program's one of the better programs in the Central Section. You guys battled to a 13-7 loss. Were there some takeaways in that game? You know, no moral victories, but I'm saying, like, hey, some of these guys stepped up a little bit more than maybe we had hoped. Like, was there a little bit of hope in that Sanger game, or what did you guys learn from that game?
Yeah, we really felt like we, you know, hats off to Sanger. Like you said, we agree with all those things you said. They're CMAC runs through them until someone beats them. Everyone's been close and had their opportunities, but they just keep pulling it out. So, you know, they're a great program, coached by a great guy. When we watched the film, we know, like, we were our own worst enemies. We had 13 penalties. They only had 3. You know, we had 115 yards in penalties. They had 15. So it was a lot of self-infliction, and it's the stuff that where we just have to be more disciplined in everything we do, because against good teams like Sanger or when you get to the playoffs, you know, the differences between winning and losing are just those small details, a 5-yard penalty here to extend a drive or not. And, you know, we did that to ourselves. We crossed we were in the red zone 3 times against Sanger's, and then penalties pulled us out of the red zone and we failed to score. Those opportunities really hurt us. And we just learned that, you know, kind of in that game, to answer your question, sorry, is we could be more physical up front, and we need to run the ball and be a little bit more physical. And I think, you know, getting the quarterback involved in the run game has helped just the run game in general. And it takes a little bit of pressure out of the guys in the box. So him getting healthy and, you know, getting 2 running backs going has really helped us.
So San Joaquin Memorial is next week, and gosh darn, there were a lot of points played in that Madera game last night. What, 96 total, 50-46, I believe, was that score. What's going on with Memorial putting up all these points? What are you seeing them? What have you seen so far in film and some of your notes?
Yeah, they're just, you know, they don't beat themselves. You know, they played a tough schedule in the preseason, just like Sanger did. And you're seeing they're trying to, you know, everyone's battling for a better playoff spot. So we're seeing, again, it's like, you know, you go from Bowden Smith, great quarterback, now on to Colton, who's a stud too. Same way, he's going to they got great athletes on the perimeter to get the ball to in space. But then again, that quarterback's legs, as he keeps improving as a passer, his legs are still deadly. So you feel like you're just, you know, whatever you do, you know, you're giving up something. And he's just doing a great job making plays. We felt, you know, watching the film, Madera played him tough. They just had a couple breaks, you know, kind of go against them, a tip pick six, you know, and some other things. But it's an evenly matched game. We felt like against Madera, it's pretty evenly matched too. So we expect another close game. It seems like a rivalry game. There's definitely a rivalry between Bullard and Memorial. So we're looking forward to it. I was kind of introduced to that last year. So this is a game I know the boys are pretty fired up to play. And, you know, we'll be excited to play them next week at Ratcliffe.
Yeah, that's going to be a game. Okay, so at Ratcliffe. Yeah, and I can attest to that rivalry between San Joaquin Memorial and Bullard in every sport. I've seen quite a few games. There's definitely no love lost between those two schools. All right, we got about another minute here with Coach Franklin. 4-4 on the season, 2-1 in the CMAC, like I mentioned. Playoff seedings, you guys are a base D1 team. I'm looking at high school ratings right now. Everything has been populated from the games last night. You guys are sitting number 20 overall. I haven't had time to really sort things out this morning, but where do you guys see yourself in playoffs? Again, you got two more games left in the year, but where do you think you guys are going to land?
Jeez, I don't know, Paul. That's a great question.
Or do you even care? Like, do you even care?
I mean, it's like I did early because of the strength of schedule. It really helped us. But right now, it's like, you know, that's great for the preseason to kind of look at where you're at. And now that you're in league, it's just 1 week at a time. And we know there's so many teams so close around us that in 2 weeks, you know, I mean, you saw Arroyo Grande beat St. Joe's. It's like, yeah. Wow, that was a huge win for them. So there's so much that could happen. These are teenage boys. You know, there's so many things that could happen. I don't try to figure it out. We're just going to try to figure out how we can just put our best foot forward against a tough Memorial team next week for homecoming.
Absolutely. All right, good stuff. Hey, thanks for jumping on and talking about your game last night and where you guys at. You guys are looking strong. Maybe you guys can keep it going, win the last two football games. You guys will be in really good shape. All right, thanks, Coach Franklin. Appreciate you as always. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Riders. Have a good one.
You bet, Coach Franklin. All right, we're going to take a break. I told you this is going to be rapid fire in this final couple segments here on the Central Valley Sports Report. We're going to take a break and then bring on Coach Mike Nolte, the head coach of Liberty Madera. They are undefeated. Took care of Parlier last night. That running game is absolutely lethal. Excited to talk to him. You're listening to it on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Got Mike Nolte, the head coach, Liberty Madera, on the line. Rapid fire, just talked to Lewis Franklin. Bullard's on a nice two-game winning streak. Well, the Hawks are 8-0 this year after defeating Parlier 48-6 last night. Wasn't able to talk to Coach Nolte last year. I've had him on the show a few times. But, Coach, how you doing, man? Impressive start to the season so far.
I'm good, Paul. Thanks for having me on. It's been a fun ride so far.
All right, so going into the Parlier game, you know, they had a couple wins this season, 0 last year, an improved program. They're, you know, they got a new coach in there, is doing a good job. What did you guys want to execute last night? Kind of what was the game plan, and then how did it play out on the field last night?
Well, yeah, first of all, I mean, yeah, I think Coach Jennings is doing a good job with the kids at Parlier, and they've really improved over the last few years under his leadership, you know, it was good. They're big and physical, man. We were hoping to, as usual, be able to run the ball. And we, you know, we we moved the ball pretty good early, and then in the second half we kind of extended that a little bit. But, you know, they were physical. They were physical on offense. They were physical on defense, and they flew around pretty good. And that's the one thing that you know, film doesn't really show. I think that you can see a little bit of that, but you know, once you see it in person, and the way their kids were playing hard and fast and physical, you know, really set us back a little bit in the first half.
So you got a really good football player named Ethan Dunn. He was one of our 1430 ESPN student athletes of the week. Just doing some great things on the football field. Just talk about him, his skill set, what he brings to the program, and how electric he is with the football.
Yeah, Ethan really has been good for us, along with other guys. But Ethan has a good ability to see blocks in front of him. Great vision running the ball. Strong kid, strong legs, and really is hard to tackle at times. Really hits the hole hard, and he's been really good for us on both sides of the ball.
And you got some other players as well. Looking at these stats, I want to get to these stats in just a second, but you got a sophomore that has 535 yards rushing on the season. You have a senior that has 632 yards and 9 touchdowns. Ethan Dunn, who you just talked about, 40 yards. So he's about to hit 1,000 yards and 17 touchdowns. So talk about those other running backs and what they bring to the field too.
Well, our sophomore Henry Bilski has been a real great addition to our varsity team. Sebastian Graham, another senior, like Ethan, another senior, has been really force blocking, running. I mean, he's one of those do-it-all type guys too. The three of them having the success they had, really feed off of each other. I mean, our ability to be able to give the ball to all three of them and make some things happen is the reason probably all three of them have been successful, because, you know, it's sort of, we're not real one dimensional in our run game. We can, you know, attack you with three different guys. And, you know, I don't want to short the guys up front, the offensive line that's doing their job, because, you know, they've been really the reason that all three of those guys are getting the job done.
And I know you love your offensive linemen, right? And you've praised them in the past. So averaging 361 rushing yards a game before last night's game. I'm not sure where Central Second Section record is on that. I know you don't care. I know you just want to play football and win football games, but that's pretty darn impressive. Like, is that like kind of what you and your coaching staff expected this year? We got some horses, and we're going to try to run it down your throats.
Yeah, I think we all going into the season knew we were going to be pretty physical up front, and you know, obviously the we knew who we had coming up running the football, and knew we could be successful doing that as long as the execution was there and we took care of the football from game to game.
So I'm curious about the wrinkles in your type of offense. Are you putting those three guys in different spots? Is your quarterback running the ball much this year? Because I know you've had some athletes that's a threat as well. So are you just kind of like a double tight? Use variations on wing T? Is that what it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. Our quarterback is a you know, he throws the ball well, but he is a fourth running back for us too. I mean, he's a big strong kid that's really a threat as well that they have to look out for. So, but yeah, as far as formations go, I mean, traditional wing T, we can get into, you know, some spread stuff pretty easy, with the ability of our guys to catch the ball. Yeah, we can put pressure on defenses with formations as well.
We got a couple minutes with Coach Nolte, the head coach at Liberty Madera. Are you do you follow the playoffs and high school ratings that much and base divisions, or just like, hey, we're going to take it one game at a time? I know you're the school's athletic director as well. You guys are base D5. Do you think you're going to get bumped up to D4, or do you think you're going to stay in D5?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying to you if I told you I hadn't been taking a peek at it every once in a while. But with the new 25% rule, as far as being able to be moved up only if you're in the top 25% of that bracket, I think it's close. I mean, there's other teams out there that are very good and ranked up there and in the higher base division. So I don't know. We'll just see what the committee has to comes up with, and we'll take whatever we get and do the best we can with it.
Well, I tell you what, if some of those teams get moved up from D5 to D4, that D4 bracket could be absolutely loaded. There's a lot of good football teams, and yours is definitely one of them. We got about 45 seconds or so, Coach. How does this team, their personality-wise, how does this team gel, and how's that helped you guys win football games?
I think our senior leadership on our football team is probably one that is right up there with the best of them that we've had. That they're doing a good job holding each other accountable. They're doing a good job leading the way with different little things that teams do. I think that's a huge part of it. And the guys we talked about already are the ones leading the way. So it's important that in the really good teams I've had in the past, it's your best players are your hardest workers, and they sort of lead the way for the rest of them. So that's what we got this year, and we're sort of just enjoying the ride, man. I hope they're good kids and they deserve success, and they're getting it, and it's as a result of what they're doing. All the little things, all the big things, leading the way, and it's fun to watch happen.
Absolutely, you guys are 8-0. Thanks, Coach Nolte, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
All right, thank you for having me.
You bet. That's a wrap for today's show. Thanks to First String Sports, Tanvir Singh for producing the show, Cam Worrell, Jackson Moore, Lewis Franklin, and Mike Nolte. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.